You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network of podcasts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me for today's episode is Hard Candy Mandy.
Yo, dude, I'm always here.
You are always here.
Pretty much always here.
Been for a while.
Yeah.
Movie Revolt Dan, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
The newer, improved, and older Movie Revolt Dan, so you're wiser now than you would have been on our last record. I think that's how it works.
I like to think so.
Mr. Fridley Cent.
Hi.
You are here.
I'm the normal one.
Are any of us normal? Today we're taking a break from some of our series, so no video game talk today as far as video game films, and also no Kevin Smith talk today. We are actually going to give you a movie review. And like we do typically throughout the year, we always find a way or some time to review the different comic book movies that come out. So today we're talking all about Thor Ragnarok, which I guess technically is not how you say that if you're from where that word originates from. But I don't know, I can't pronounce the other way, so we're just going to go with Ragnarok. So Thor Ragnarok, which was directed by Taika Waititi, and of course stars Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston, Idris Elba, Kate Blanchett, Mark Ruffalo, and a bunch of other people. So we will get into the characters as we go through this. Thor came out just a little less than 2 weeks ago, and it is making all kinds of money and doing pretty well. It had a budget of $180 million. It's currently just domestic total is way over $200 already. I think it's $260, somewhere in $220. $220, I think, is where it's at right now. And it's obviously going to rise higher than that. Rotten Tomatoes-wise, it's got a 92%. So doing well at the box office, doing well with the critics. But let's see what the Cinema Geeks thought of it. So before we get to this movie in particular, Dan, what was your feelings? I know you've shared it before on different episodes, but for those that haven't heard those episodes, what was your thoughts on the first two Thor movies, and what was kind of your anticipation level coming into this one?
I like the first two Thor films. I do think like the first Thor, looking back at it, it's not as I think as good as some of the other Marvel films. I know a lot of people hate the Dark World, but there's a lot about that I really enjoyed, especially in the realm of the relationship between like Loki and his mother, and Loki and Thor, and that along with like the different portal battle sequence at the end. But I could see why it may not be as popular with others, because I do think that a lot of the like humor that is in those films isn't as organic as it is in this. When it came to Ragnarok, I was really looking forward to it. I like the idea of like, okay, they were going to go with a lighter approach, which I understood. I kind of wanted to see partially a more like serious take on Ragnarok, but I kind of get why they weren't going that route. I mean, I love the director. I've loved, What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for Wilder People. Both movies were in my top 10 for the last 2 years, so I had a lot of hope going into this. So I was very anticipating what this would turn into, and especially a lot of the trailers, the storylines are taking from, knowing there was Planet Hulk was going to be an element of it and things like that. I thought it had a lot of potential, and I ended up really, really liking it. I mean, it is a straight up comedy per se, with a little bit of, you know, drama put in there here and overall in some action as well. I was actually surprised like with this when it came to kind of the action beats, that a lot of the action was kind of quick and not, it didn't overstay its welcome in a way. There weren't a lot of like huge over the top action set pieces. They were kind of contained, but overall I think kind of the best was just like the array of characters that were on the display in this movie. Just, you know, of course, Chris Hemsworth as Thor, like he, I think, is really getting into that role. And I think it can't be understated how much he makes this movie work. And he does have some comedic chops that I think, especially his physical humor, that was really effective. So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed pretty much it throughout. And I kind of liked how it, in a way, like, it's two major stories kind of crammed into one, where like the middle act is in itself, it's almost self-contained. I had some issues here and there. I don't know if all the jokes worked all the time, but I felt more often than not they did. So I walked away happy.
All right, so one positive take so far, and we'll get more into what you liked and didn't like as we go through here. Amanda, obviously this was marketed as a team-up movie in a lot of ways, as you're going to have Thor and you're going to have Hulk. You also knew who the director was, and Dan mentioned the films that we've seen of him lately with Hunt for the Wilder People and What We Do in the Shadows. And then, of course, you personally, obviously a big fan of Chris Hemsworth, and anyway, you get to see him on screen.
And Taika Waititi and his work.
So what was your anticipation level, you know, going off of the other two Thors and heading into this one with the angle that it was kind of aimed at?
My anticipation was maxed out. I wanted more Thor. I was excited to see Planet Hulk. I think that the humor and the writing really, Taika Waititi really made the movie work. His style really brought out some awesome stuff in these characters. And like Dan said, Chris Hemsworth really is funny. And I like that we get more Thor and Loki. I like we get more Hulk and Thor. I like we get more Loki reacting to Hulk. I like a lot of the new characters that we get, like the rock dude that was Taika Waititi.
Korg.
Hilarious, and everything about him worked for me. I think the villain was decent. I mean, if we get down to it, she was a baddie. We'll talk more in spoilers about, you know, what she actually accomplished, which I think was huge. And, you know, it's seems more distant since the stakes aren't like, quote unquote, real people. Like, it's not like a city like Sokovia being dropped and a ton of people being killed. But I think the bad guy still worked in this. You still had some sense of urgency enough to move the story along. And I loved all the use of color, the costuming. Just everything. I liked it.
Okay. Matt, what was your anticipation level coming in off of the other two Thors and kind of where the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, you know, what stage it's at? So what were you looking forward to, and did it pay off on initial reaction?
Oh, man. So I think that I'm probably not in the minority in thinking that the Thor movies have probably been the weakest of all of the Marvel lines. Like, not that they're bad, but I think Thor 1 and 2 don't hold a candle to Cap or Iron Man or even Ant-Man, to be honest. In that respect, it lowered my expectations, but, like, I knew the Planet Hulk story, and it, like, that is such a great story, so I knew that they had a good thing to work off of. Plus, like everyone's saying, like, Chris Hemsworth's great. Like, I've never not enjoyed his performance in anything, even beyond Thor. So, like, I had high hopes, but no expectations. I initially loved it. Like, I've been saying probably since Iron Man 3 that the third one's the best one in each line. And, it's that holds true.
All right, fair enough. I think I'm one of the few people that like all the Thor movies. I just like anything space fantasy, you know, kind of more of that realm that Marvel kind of goes into. So I lean towards those. I would take any of the Thor films over Ant-Man or over the Hulk films or things like that. I think, you know, Iron Man and Captain America are a pretty good film, so I don't know if I put them up to that level, but I do like the Thor film, so I was already excited because I like seeing Chris Hemsworth in this role, and I like kind of getting off of off of Earth and getting to explore more of the Marvel universe, I guess, in a way. And obviously a big fan of Taika Waititi, so I was looking forward to this. I wasn't sure, you know, how the Thor Hulk, you know, team up or going against each other, et cetera, how that was all going to work. So that part really didn't have much to do with my excitement or not, because I'm not familiar with, you know, the Planet Hulk story or different things that happened in the comics. But on the surface, I was definitely anticipating it. And I was positive as far as the initial reaction as well. I think I was maybe a little bit more positive right away, and as time's gone down, I've come down just very, very slightly, but overall I'm still going to be giving it a positive grade at the end of the review here. So we'll see where we all kind of land as we get towards that. But kind of getting into a couple things, because Dan, you mentioned that it was kind of two stories. somewhat, you know, crammed into one movie. So we obviously have two main settings here. We have Sakaar, aka the garbage planet, I guess, if you want to call it, or the junk planet. And then we have what's going on Asgard as the two central settings and kind of the two diverging storylines that are happening. So did you have a preference as far as which one you were more kind of interested in as the movie went on? How do you think they worked with the balance of doing kind of those two stories?
I think I enjoyed, in a way, I probably enjoyed like the Sakaar thing a little bit more, but I thought the balance was pretty strong because I felt like every time like they would go into the next story, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to stay where we were at, and then I'd get invested into like Hela's story, and then they were back, and I'm like, oh, I wanted more of that. So I felt like each little chunk left me wanting enough more of the previous one, and I thought like, you know, Hela's story overall is a pretty straightforward, you know, kind of plot device. So I don't necessarily think they needed to spend more time on it. I thought it was well done in the sense of what it was trying to achieve. But like most of the comedy obviously was within the world of Sakaar and the interaction between like Hulk and Thor and those characters. So on a pure enjoyment level, I probably like that story more, though I feel like the Hela story was more vital to the actual narrative itself.
What do you think, Amanda? Did you have a preference as far as where you wanted more of the story to go on, or did you, like Dan, feel like they did a pretty good balance of bouncing back and forth?
I think that they did do a pretty good balance of showing us what we needed to see where, but I do think that some of the more interesting stuff was on the junk planet. And I think the look was really enticing because we've seen Asgard a couple of times now. So it was intriguing to see a new realm, a new world, and to kind of immerse yourself into that. And I don't think we got enough of Sakaar. I think we could have gotten even more into the time that they spent there. I don't feel like Thor was even there that long. Like, he was like in and out, bitches. So
is that what he said?
Yeah.
Matt, what do you think? Agree with them or disagree? Well, what's your take on kind of the blending of those two different settings?
Like, I think they did a good job. Like, just conceptually, it's real hard to tell two stories that are kind of going simultaneously. And I think they did a good job of blending that. There was one or two times, though, where I was like, yeah, but, like, what's going on? Like, I don't think it's quite like Dan, where it's like, it cuts away, and I was like, and I'm like, oh, I want to see more. But really, there were like times where I'm like, hey, like, how many days have they been off planet? What's going on back at Asgard? Like, because it seems almost like when they're not looking, time's going slower. But it's also like a different world, different universe. Like, everything's weird. So time, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, as they say.
Who says that?
Doctor Who. That's a Doctor Who thing.
Oh, okay. I was like, I've never heard that. All right. Nice, nice. Along with two settings, we get two villains kind of as well with the Grandmaster and Hela. So, Dan, obviously one thing that people like to pick on when it comes to Marvel films a lot, whether it's a justified criticism or not, is the villains and if they're, you know, of high quality or not. So how do you think the dual villains worked in this story?
I guess I didn't even see like the Grandmaster as necessary like a villain per se. I guess in vain he is. So I liked him because I just thought it's like Taika Waititi is like Jeff Goldblum, just do Jeff Goldblum
in space,
yeah, and it worked, and I thought it was just, and like I didn't like, I remember watching the trailer thinking, man, I don't like his character, seems really off, but I thought in the context of the movie it was actually really funny, and I think his, not to give spoilers away, but his last line in the movie, it was perhaps my favorite of the entire film. I thought Hela, like, I thought, you know, Cate Blanchett's performer, like, I loved how she just went with it and was just like, I'm going to chew up scenery. I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. Yeah, her character is pretty, you know, one-dimensional, I would say. There's not a lot of depth to it, basically. But I do like the fact that, in a way, there's a lot of justification in what she is kind of bringing to the table, and more so what the revelations of her character say about, like, other characters, like Odin and kind of the Asgard itself and kind of the duality of of that location and like how like that gets into, I think, some of the more interesting aspects, I feel, when it comes to the mythology of, you know, of Thor and those characters. But as a character herself, she was effective in what she needed to do. But I like, if I'm ranking like the best villains of this year, I think, you know, I like someone like Ego was a little bit more interesting of a character compared to Hela, where, which is fun, it was effective, but maybe not super memorable. Amanda, I do love her headdress, though. That was pretty badass.
Yeah, I was scared of that thing.
Agree or disagree?
About her headdress? Yeah.
Yes, that and everything else.
It was a swipe, and then it was her, like, war helmet. I was like, why not me?
Do you think she was an interesting villain, though, in comparison, like Dan saying, even to some of the villains we've seen this year in some of the other comic book films?
I think she did hold her own, and I think that her story was definitely interesting. I liked that we broke down literally a layer of Asgard to see, you know, it wasn't always this gilded palace with endless sunshine and green grass and, you know, never-ending ale. I like that we get to see how that was built up a little bit and that everything comes from darker times.
Matt, one thing that I was curious about, and I don't know what yourself and Dan, as far as your exposure to some of these comics were, but are you guys, either of you, familiar with the Grandmaster as he appeared in the comics?
No. Like, I've seen him in card games, like the Versus system I'm pretty sure he's in, and he might have been in that Marvel vs. DC series.
Because I was kind of curious, and maybe you guys can't speak to this, but they changed somewhat of the physical appearance there, since I guess in the comics he was blue-skinned as far as that went, and there were some specific reasons why Waititi wanted him not to be blue-skinned in this. I was wondering if maybe some pure, you know, comic fans would have a problem with that, or if they just kind of understand the reasoning behind it. But for me, it doesn't
he's
much
not like
difference.
A, he's often more used as, and actually in the comics, they've, because that's the way the world works, they've kind of changed his appearance to more reflect that of the actual movie now. And he's not like a super gigantic important character. He's like one of the elders of the universe, and often he's kind of used like this as a plot device. Like there was like a series called like Contest of Champions or something like that, where it was basically him getting all these characters to fight one another, and that's basically the point of that character. It's like, we want these characters to fight, but in a way that it makes sense, so let's just create this character in order for that to happen, because that's like the thing he likes to do. He's almost like you know, the voice of the fan in a way, like, gotcha. In his like a need to have all these people fight. I mean, there's more to it than that, but like, he's not, you know, he's not like a character that you like Thanos level or anything like that. He's often used in the same type of elk he's used here, so I don't think most fans would have an issue with it.
That makes sense. Something I was curious, though, is that they said that, obviously, he is the brother of the Collector that we've already seen Benicio del Toro play in the Guardians movies, and the producer stated that there may be plans or maybe a desire at some point to see the Grandmaster and the Collector appear in the same movie. Matt, is that something that would be interesting to you, to see Goldblum and del Toro's characters interacting at some point in the future?
Is it wrong to say no? Like, I don't know that I care either way. I think that Goldblum was funny, and he worked in this, and I guess they could do almost like an Odd Couple, right? If one's real serious and one's real silly, like, they can have that. But, like, I don't think that Goldblum's character, like, works on any level as, like, a recurrent villain. And so I don't know why you would bring him in, and it feels like it would almost just be, like, a fan service thing that takes up time in a movie. So, like, I almost want to say no.
Amanda, Dan, agree or disagree?
I really like Benicio del Toro, and I think that his Collector character was weird and intriguing. So I think I would like to see more of him regardless. But the Collector and
Grandmaster.
The Grandmaster. I think they could have like some funny little scenes together. I don't think it needs to be a ton of screen time, but something together would be interesting.
Dan, what do you think?
I mean, I like Goldblum and I like Del Toro, Benicio Del Toro as actors, and I'd be interested just to see how well they play off one another, even if it's just like like an extra scene or something like that, one of the end, like the, you know, after credit sequences or something like that. I think that'd be kind of a funny thing to do where you're not really impacting the actual movie because it's after it actually happens, but you get to have a little bit of interplay,
right,
like we tend to see with them. So
yeah, I could see that. I don't want a ton of it, but I think a little bit would be interesting to see, but not needed, as Matt was saying, necessarily for any of the films. One thing that, Dan, you mentioned right off the bat, obviously this is a comedy, so this is trying to be a little bit more heavy on the jokes than maybe we're used to with some of the other Thor films. So I'm just curious, for all of you guys, kind of where did the comedy work? Was it as funny as you were hoping? You know, what hit, what missed for you? And kind of what was your take on the humor overall? We'll start with you, Dan. What do you kind of think as far as the humor of Thor?
Knowing that I was a huge fan of, you know, what we didn't do in the Shadows and the other films, it very much worked for me. There were some things here and there that didn't, but they were, you know, not huge, didn't impact me a great deal. One that comes to mind was, like, there was a specific joke regarding, you know, the exit they were using and the name for it that I just felt like was maybe a bridge too far for me.
Yeah.
It just seemed a little bit like a, you know, it almost felt like a, like the taser face joke from the Guardians of the Galaxy. But other than that, I thought it worked well. Especially Korg. I loved, like, anytime he was on screen, I'm just like, I want more of that. So I do think a lot of, unfortunately, some of the bigger parts are ruined in the trailer, but where I felt like in a lot of times when it came to Guardians of the Galaxy, even though I liked that movie, where it didn't happen in this, where I never felt like it was undercutting any of the drama, mostly because it was limited on drama, or like there the jokes that went that I wasn't a huge fan of were few and far between compared to some of them in Guardians of the Galaxy, where like you had the nipples joke and things like that, where that didn't happen nearly as much with this.
Yeah, that is kind of a line that they have to kind of balance, and we've seen it be, you know, crossed over a couple times in the Guardians films, and maybe, like you said, with this one once or twice, where they almost borderline something that you would think would be in like a Transformers movie, you know, as far as the just toilet humor that Michael Bay puts in there. But luckily it was, I agree with you, a little bit more few and far between here. Amanda, did any of the jokes really work with you on a high level? Because obviously in Guardians we had like the Mary Poppins y'all joke or something that everybody was talking about afterwards. Was there anything like that for you in this one, or did you enjoy the humor just on a more subtle level all the way through?
I think throughout I liked the humor. I definitely want to watch it again to try to remember, you know, things that are standout-ish and that I latched onto. But having watched this a couple weeks ago now, and I watched Guardians again last night, so I'm having a hard time separating the two. But I did laugh pretty much just the entire film. So
Matt, what about you? Did you think, how did it compare, I guess? Because I guess the easiest thing that we keep comparing it to is Guardians, because that's the other Marvel film that tries to rely heavily on humor. So in comparison to what we kind of felt about that one, how do you think the humor played in this?
Ooh, that's interesting. It also is really good to compare it to Guardians because they're both like cosmic rather than like superhero
right.
cape movies in New York, like most Marvel movies you'd expect. To be real, I did not know this was a comedy going in. Like, I just figured, like, you know, I saw the trailers and I saw that, like, I know him from work. Like, and that might have been the Mary Poppins, y'all, if it wasn't in the theaters, or if it wasn't
right.
in the trailer, rather. Like, because that might have been one of, like, the funniest moments, had you not know it going in. But, like, I didn't, like, the comedy was, I want to say off-putting, but it wasn't, like, unwanted. Like, so, I wasn't comparing it to Guardians at all going in. I was comparing it to the other Thors and to the more of the Avengers line movies. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I guess I just never made those connections. But, like, I feel like the comedy in Guardians seems more like Guardians than this seemed like Thor at first to me. If that makes sense.
Was there jokes that really worked for you and that you'll remember going out of this, or was it just like, I remember being entertained and laughing throughout?
I've got a terrible memory, so like definitely that second one. Like,
I know a lot of people kind of go to like the scene where we get it right initially, you know, where Thor is swinging around on the rope, you know, where it's just gently swinging and he has to stop the guy from talking as he kind of gets does his 360 around, so there's stuff like that. And then I think a lot of people are going to the Korg character is kind of like, you know, talking about Doug and talking about that his little friend that he, that's dead or not dead, etc.
like
carried him around ever since.
That character is probably the funniest character, but that opening scene, I kind of want to talk about it a little bit for literally nobody. Like, there's a podcast I started listening to back in July that's become, like, probably my favorite podcast, like, really surprisingly, that's called Campaign. And it's essentially like a Dungeons & Dragons game or actual play, but in the Star Wars universe. And Thor in that intro was essentially just like it looked like someone had written like campaign fanfic. Like, it was so perfectly every single one of those main characters all within like 2 minutes. And like it cheered me up unlike anything I ever expected. It like so set me in the right mood for that movie, and I loved it. Like, that opening I loved, but for the weirdest reasons that are really hard to relate to.
I like it. Another thing that a lot of people have somewhat I've heard some digs about it from some of the other critics, reviewers, podcasters out there, but some people were kind of digging on the CGI and some of the visual effects. So I wanted to kind of get your guys' take on the visual aspects of the film and kind of the color schemes, the worlds, the CGI on Hulk and different things of that nature. Do you think it worked well in this film compared to some of the other stuff we've gotten this year, or do you think there was some opportunities missed when it came to some of the green screening and maybe some of the I know when they go to, where did they go, to Ireland at one point, it was kind of jarring for a lot of people from a visual standpoint. Dan, did you see any of that, or did you feel like the visuals worked for the most part?
I definitely think there are times we can definitely see, like, notice in the green screens apparent, especially when they, I think it's to go to Norway to visit somebody. Yeah. And especially because they make a remark about how beautiful it is, and then that just kind of draws your attention to the scenery, and with it not being on location, it makes it even more noticeable, where maybe if it's just, you know, in the background, it's not as. I think that definitely brought it out. And there are some other sequences here and there, but when it came to, like, the actual action or, like, the characters that were mostly all CGI, I didn't mind that. And there were also, like, there are moments where I think it's great. Like, there are specific kind of sequences in which it, like, super slows down, and it certainly looks kind of computer generated, but in a way I thought was really effective. Almost like a, I don't know, like a moving mosaic painting or something like that, where you see like the action slow down. And I thought that was really well done. It was a, kind of a look that I wasn't expecting. It was very, and I thought it was used well, because, like, you know, in those moments it was when things were getting a little bit more serious and getting away from the more comedic aspect. So I think definitely there were some inconsistent moments for sure, but I thought when it needed it never fully took me out of it.
Okay, fair enough. Matt, another thing I was curious about, just your general take on the visuals and some of the CGI as well, but what do you think, too, of the, I guess, the evolution of Hulk and kind of what they've done from, you know, the different appearances that he's had within the Marvel Cinematic Universe and where it started at to where it is now?
Well, like, I really enjoy Hulk, and they've made him look more and more like Mark Ruffalo, or maybe I'm just noticing it now. Like, because I don't remember him looking nearly as much as Ruffalo-y at first as he definitely did in this movie. Like, you could definitely see what they were doing there. Like, I enjoy Hulk talking, because, like, that's a thing. Like, in the 90s, like, they just fused Bruce Banner and the Hulk into one character. Like Hulk was just a genius, and and that was a thing for years. And so, like, I'd honestly enjoy seeing that. I wish they'd give Hulk his own movie. Like, I think he deserves it at this point. But I enjoy the evolution of the Hulk as a character, where instead of just being like he shows up and he breaks a thing and then, like, he turns back into Banner and, like, that's it. Like, he's grown, like, especially from Avengers 2, where he's like, no, I've got to get out of here. I'm doing this. And then, like, into this movie where he's, like, fully fleshed out, like, you know, co-character in this movie, where it's almost as much Hulk as it is Thor. Like, I really like how they've given him an arc and not just made him a prop to be used in the big fight scenes.
Yeah, I can see that as well. I think I agree. I liked what they've kind of done with his evolution. It was a little jarring at first that he looks different, but I guess that's something that you can expect as the technology improves. Amanda, what did you think of the CGI on Hulk and looking a little more Ruffalo, or just kind of just visuals in general? You had mentioned a couple of things as far as colors and stuff like that earlier.
I like the Ruffalo Hulk. I think that he looked super good in this. I like they even like gave him different outfits and stuff, and they show him like chilling out on a bed and like doing like stuff as Hulk. I liked it that he wasn't just running around smashing buildings and shit. Like, he was just hanging out and he was fucking Hulk. I like that. And I think that the look of the, you know, Planet Hulk was really dope. And even when they're all, you know, out in the streets and everybody's cheering on Hulk and, you know, showing their support for him, I think all of that stuff looked really cool. And even just the garbage and stuff that was there was super interesting, and with all the portals and stuff. So I think that was my favorite visual stuff was on that world.
All right. I wanted to get you guys just a chance to kind of talk about any notes that you had that we haven't got to, or anything special that you wanted to bring up that's not spoiler territory, and then we'll get into spoilers and kind of go over a few of those things and give our grades at the end, but give you each a chance kind of going around the horn to talk about anything that that hasn't come up yet in just natural discussion. Amanda, ladies first, we'll start with you. What else did you want to bring up about Thor Ragnarok?
Carl Urban, completely unrecognizable, but hilarious. He was, like, really, like, his accent was super jarring.
That's a character that a lot of people have had problems with. A lot of people have been dissing on Scourge as a character in this, and I was kind of curious what your guys' take was on him. You liked him, though, overall?
I liked him as a character. He was a little annoying, but I think the payoff with him was great, and... I think some of the things he said was, you know, a little funny, and like I said, his performance was a little jarring, but I think that if you can completely transform yourself, then you're doing something right.
Any other notes that you had that you wanted to get out? Pre-spoiler.
Heimdall, bigger badass, is what I've got.
Yeah, we
here.
Finally got to see him kind of do some stuff.
Yeah, out and about, doing some stuffs. And I think that I just super loved, like, the camaraderie between, like, Hulk and Thor, and also Thor and Loki. And, like I said, even Loki reacting to the Hulk, even being around, I think some of my favorite things.
It comes up with a couple of things that you can react to, Dan, and then give your final thoughts, pre-spoiler-wise as well, kind of your thoughts on Scourge as a character. And then another thing I was curious, since you brought up Loki, do you guys think that Loki is still as effective as he has been in the past, or is it, I don't know, maybe like diminishing returns as far as seeing him and having him kind of go through the same situation where can you trust him, can you not trust him, and that type of thing, or did you think it worked just as well? So I'll let you react to those and kind of also give some final thoughts you haven't got out yet.
Regarding Loki, I think I was surprised how much like he was kind of used as a joke, and especially like the first time we see him. I thought that, considering where the last Thor movie ended, I thought that would be much more of a bigger plot point than it was in this, when it was kind of quickly resolved. So I was a little bit surprised he was much more comedic in this compared to the past. But I love the interplay between him and Thor, and I don't know, I really enjoy the back and forth with them, where, you know, they're attempting to kind of always one up one another, where it is very much a brother relationship, where they do kind of love one each other, but they also hate each other, and they're always trying to really get the favor. So I don't know, I like that, and the way it developed throughout the story. Regarding Scourge, I thought he was fine for what he was. He was basically your top goon character that has a little bit of an arc. I don't necessarily think he was anything more than that, but maybe because it was Carl Urban, people thought it should be more, but I don't know. Very much reminiscent of the comic character as well. Maybe not as sadistic as a comic character, though. But the other piece where we were talking about Hulk, one thing I really liked too was the transition from Hulk to Banner in this, and not to get any spoilers, but I felt like it was kind of the best way they treated it, where there was actually this fight between both sides to kind of get control, where we've seen it in the past where it's not necessarily that. It's like often like either Banner's like really enjoying it in a way, but in this you can see like there's this fight constantly between the two sides of that of the character, and I thought like just the way it was rendered in this was like very violent in a way, which it was kind of unexpected, but I thought it was well done.
All right, fair enough. But with all of that, I agree with a lot of that too, and I think one thing that that I thought, well, first of all, I have a terrible memory because I even forgot where Loki was at the end of the last film and where he would be starting this film. So I was completely blindsided by that because I had, for some reason, spaced on that. And I also, at the end, was asking which character was Carl Urban. So I apparently am not very perceptive because I did not recognize him in that role at all. Matt, reactions to either any of the stuff that Amanda said or Dan said, or just your final thoughts before we get into spoilers?
To say the word fan fiction again, I loved Loki and Thor in human clothes, like, walking around Earth, like, they're in New York, they're, you know, over in Europe,
taking selfies and shit.
It's so good. I don't want that fangirl story, but I so do. Like, I just want those two brothers being brothers, like, not fighting the whole universe, like, being silly in New York. I don't know. I loved Loki and Thor's play in this. And I enjoy the, how much can you trust Loki? Like, it hasn't been overdone for me, but at the same time, I enjoy getting a Star Wars movie every year, so... I don't burn out on things I like usually.
I like it. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a few other things that are important to the film that might be spoiler territory, just to give you guys a fair warning. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back after the break.
After these messages, we'll be right back. Yeah.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk.
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, thanks for sticking with us. More talk on Thor Ragnarok. I want to kind of do a little quick rundown of some characters and get your guys' take on some of the things that they were involved with in the movie and kind of see where we go from there. But the first that I wanted to do here real quick was, obviously, right away on Asgard, we get the scene that Dan was talking about before, where we are reminded, obviously, that Loki is parading around as Odin. And then obviously they go off to find Odin and what happens with him. And then we also get the play that's happening on stage with a couple of cameos from some famous actors. Amanda, what was your take on the cameos there that were involved? And
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon and?
The other Hemsworth.
The other Hemsworth. Which is weird because I was like, well, that's Matt Damon. And that other guy just looks like it's Chris Hemsworth playing himself. I'm like, who is that supposed to be? It looks too much like Chris Hemsworth. And it was obviously his brother.
Luke Hemsworth.
Yes, not Liam.
Not Liam.
So what did you think of that, Amanda? And then what did you think of the way that Odin played a part in this film?
Super sad with Odin. I think that there was some really touching touching moment between brothers and sons and the father. I think that moment did work for me a lot, and I felt Odin's sadness and his relief at passing. So that made me feel a lot. And I did like Loki posing as Odin, that little play. I find it really odd that nobody freaking noticed. But I guess when you're just a bunch of partying immortals, like, you don't blink at that kind of thing.
Dan, and some people saying that the Odin send-off was handled maybe a little bit too quickly, or there wasn't as much of a emotional pull that you could have got from that. Agree or disagree with that? And do you find that the cameos during that play were jarring, or do you think they were just funny?
I guess regarding the cameos, that was kind of ruined for me going in. I was someone, so I knew about it, so it wasn't jarring for me. I do know, like, my wife didn't even notice. I talked to her because we watched it afterwards. She's like, I had no idea it was even Matt Damon. I wasn't even paying attention.
what?
Yeah, and most of the people in my, like, the audience didn't even, like, notice either. So it was kind of weird. I was like,
that's funny. All right,
well. Regarding the emotional pull, I mean, I don't disagree. It wasn't super emotional per se, but I also think I'm kind of glad they didn't spend too much time on it. I thought it just kind of got accomplished what it needed to get accomplished, and it was mostly kind of there to provide some sort of exposition in the reasoning behind what's happening next. And I guess what I really liked about it, like I mentioned, is how you discover kind of the other side of Odin and how he brought this upon them, and how he back in the day was a pretty evil dude. He was, you know, he was a tyrant that would do some pretty horrific things, and how that's kind of changed throughout time. I thought that was kind of interesting when you had a character that like had some justification in what she's doing, because she was kind of just doing what she was born to be doing, and in a way. So I guess I like that element, but I don't disagree. It wasn't necessarily super emotional, but I guess I never felt like that was
needed.
Really, the intent of that. So.
Yeah, I think too. You point to something that presents to me the best strand of the story that's going on Asgard. Like, that half of the movie really would be a lot less enjoyable for me if you don't have kind of that other element, like Amanda was saying, where we kind of get to see the other layers of Asgard and kind of the past of what Odin's past is like, and kind of things that he's done. I think that's what makes that whole Asgard storyline somewhat interesting, and without that it just wouldn't work at all for me. So I do think that it's good, but I don't think it was needed to be too, you know, we don't necessarily need a Charles Xavier or Logan like moment like we got in Logan or something like that in this situation, especially since it is somewhat trying to balance that whole comedy / fantasy world. Matt, what did you think of the Odin aspects of this film, or you know, how Loki kind of starts out?
Of course, Loki's intro is great. It's hilarious. I like that moment with Odin. Again, it was nested in an area of the film that I said I already enjoyed. And it worked in a way that he just... like, you're supposed to show, don't tell, right? That's movies. He just told us, like, hey, here's what the next thing's gonna be. Like, I'm just gonna blurt out everything that's gonna happen in this movie, but no one's gonna get real upset about it. Like, they did a great job of conveying a bunch of information without being too jarring, and I gotta respect that.
Another thing, as far as when it comes to characters that we can talk about a little bit, obviously we have Valkyrie involved in this, and we also get a sequence involving one of our other superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Doctor Strange. Dan, what did you think about either one of those characters, and did those sequences work for you?
The Doctor Strange one was, I don't know, there's part of it that I liked, but like, it was kind of weird in the sense of like I never got the reasoning behind the fact that room kept changing the way it did. And it was funny comedically, but I felt like, I don't know, I was thinking back to the actual movie of Doctor Strange, and like, that didn't necessarily go, but I do kind of want to see more interaction between Doctor Strange and Loki. We just got like a little taste of it, but I thought that little bit was interesting. Valkyrie, I thought that she was a strong character. I do wish there was a little bit more, maybe like to her arc. And like, I was a little worried when she first appears, and you kind of have the moment where she, you know, gets off the ship and like passes out or whatever, and like, I'm not sure about this. A little bit overly cliche, but. Ended up really working, and a lot because that actress is pretty strong, and she's surprised because like, I was looking back at some of the stuff she's been in, and I didn't realize it was the same actress. She's pretty has a lot of reach, so ended up actually being one of my favorite characters of the movie, just in the sense of what she brought to the role.
Yeah, Tessa Thompson appearing here as Valkyrie. Amanda, what did you think of Valkyrie or Doctor Strange?
I loved the Doctor Strange sequence. I'm falling for 30 minutes. I loved his interaction with Thor a lot. And I think that Valkyrie's character was pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't like, oh my god, this, you know, this character is so in depth and, you know, so much to learn about her. It was more like, I'm gonna drink with this bitch, and we can fall down together drunk, and it'll be fun.
Matt, what do you think of Doctor Strange and or Valkyrie as they appeared in Thor Ragnarok?
I think, like, Jan hit it perfectly. Like, I think Valkyrie's intro was a little weak, but I think ultimately she became one of the best characters in the movie. Shoot, what was the other one?
Doctor Strange.
Oh, Doctor Strange. Yeah. Again, Dan. Like, it was like, I do, like, the teleporting thing was really weird, and like, it seemed almost like it was half there just to set up, like, it was like, half of this is just to set up, the in-the-moment jokes, and the other half is just to set up the, Umbrella Hammer joke later. Like, it didn't seem like it really served a purpose, and I just like that a little bit. But I do enjoy, between that teleportation and what he does to Loki, shows his growth as a sorcerer, which I think is good and interesting, and is going to be great to see where he is in Infinity War.
Yeah, it almost saved them from having to do anything else with Doctor Strange before his appearance in the next, like, team-up movie. Like, we were like, okay, he's already perfected a bunch of his work. I thought maybe the sequence just went on a little bit too long for me as far as the number of jumps and stuff like that. I thought I could have done a little bit less with that and maybe a little bit more with him and Loki. But otherwise, I agree with you guys on Valkyrie. I think that adds another element to the story that's taking place on Asgard. So I enjoyed that that element of it for sure. It's kind of another historical piece of that we were missing. So last thing I want to bring up, and then I'll give you guys kind of free rein to go over any other spoiler stuff. But obviously another thing that happens over the course of this film is Thor's hammer being destroyed and us kind of going to see Thor now with his natural power of being able to summon, you know, the thunder and lightning, so to speak. So, Dan, how did that work for you? And kind of, do you think that was an effective choice as far as the writing and directing going to kind of move him away from the hammer?
It's tough. I just love the hammer. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to miss it. Like, I feel like it's going to be a much different character if he doesn't have that hammer. So I'm intrigued to see, like, how that goes, just because I feel like they've done a lot of stuff with the Marvel films where you think, oh, and then, like, the end, it kind of goes back to status quo a little bit. But I don't know. Like, it was unexpected. Like, I thought at the end, like, he would, you know, he'd get his hammer back or get a different hammer, because there's been different versions of that hammer. I don't know. I'm really interested in seeing it, especially, you know, we didn't talk about it, but seeing he basically is becoming Odin at this point. So I'm wondering kind of where the trajectory of his character is going, knowing that a lot of these characters don't have that, or actors, I should say, have that much time left in their contract. Is that kind of a, you know, giving us idea of what's coming? But I don't know. It's going to be weird seeing Thor without a hammer. I'm not going to lie.
Matt, what do you think of Thor without the hammer, Thor's new powers, Thor's one eye, any of that?
Oh, man. Yeah, dude, the character took a pretty massive turn by the end of that movie, huh? At first I was pretty excited, especially when I heard that, a lot of it stemmed from Kevin Smith. You guys heard this, right? Like, Kevin Smith was talking about Thor in some interview or some podcast or something, and Chris Hemsworth heard it, and then, like, because of that, spoke up to the director, or no, it was Feig, right? And was like, hey, maybe we should get rid of the hammer, we should cut his hair and, like, modernize this character and make him less of the, you know, the stifling 70s, 60s character he's been. And a lot of that stemmed from Kevin Smith. And, like, when I found that out, like, it was exciting. But honestly, by the end of it, like, I want that hammer back. like, I don't care about the hair. And I honestly don't care either way about the lightning powers. But, yeah, like, if they're not setting him up to, like, become just, like, king of Asgard, like, I'm the new Odin, essentially. I don't know what else they're planning to do with him. It does seem almost like it's like the second to last step in that character's arc before they're done with him.
Amanda, your crush gets his hair cut, gets his eye gouged, loses his hammer. I mean, doesn't matter because it's Chris Hemsworth?
Sad about the hammer. I don't think he needed to lose that fucking eye. Hair looks super cute. I liked his like war paint look and stuff. I thought that was really cool. I liked it.
And I didn't ask you about Hulk's butt.
Oh, Hulk's butt. I'm just glad I didn't have to see his front butt.
His front butt.
Watchmen.
Sad about the hammer, though, huh?
Sad about that, man. The hammer was pretty cool, but his new powers were legit. He did, like, a Raiden move at one point. I'm like, look at this dude. But his powers did look super cool, and I think that he used them in a super dope way. So I like that, but I do definitely miss the hammer. One other thing I want to talk about spoilers.
Go for it.
I liked that him and Jane split up. I didn't like their fucking relationship in the first place. Like, it made no sense. Didn't give a shit about it. I liked the jokes surrounding the split up or whatever, but she really was super useless. And whiny, and I didn't like her. Like, I couldn't tell what the spark was between them, so I'm glad that they broke up and he can just live his life.
Any other spoiler territory stuff?
Let's see. Okay, so with Loki, when he sent Odin away to Earth, basically to die, like, that was pretty fucking bogus. Like, he knew he was gonna die there, he knew he was just gonna waste away, like, fuck this dude, I'm gonna just go drop him off on Earth, assume his identity, and have people feed me grapes. And I thought that was really bogus, and especially after, like, losing your mom, now you're gonna do something like that to your dad? And he clearly was upset when his dad died. I mean, even though it's not his birth father, but whatever. But I thought that was one of the most villainous acts in the movie.
True. I agree. Matt, other takes on any spoiler territory that we haven't got to that you haven't got to say yet?
No. I have a friend, though, who said that he wishes one of the post-credit scenes was, like, the what happened to the wolf, the Fenris... the Fenrir wolf, after he got launched off the bridge, like is he just floating through space as a wolf? I don't really... I do kind of wish there was more with the undead legions that Hela had, because it seemed like she made them, and then, like, they... I don't know. Like, I feel like they could have split this into multiple movies, and I would have been happy, but, like, I also really enjoyed it, so... Yeah.
You're good. All right, Dan, any other spoiler territory stuff that you would like to get talk about?
The only thing I was kind of disappointed was with, like, how they dispatched and got rid of and, you know, killed the Warriors 3 in such a pretty harsh fashion.
Yes. And then they never talked, like, about
Volstagg
it.
Volstagg and, yeah, and, not Boulder, I forget, but they both die really quickly, and, like, that's, like, they're never talked about, especially because they were such a big part of the first film and the second film, and I really liked those characters, so I was kind of disappointed that they were... I mean, I get killing them. That's fine. I just thought, like, it felt like their deaths were... Like, nothing came of it in a way. Like, I was hoping you would see some sort of reaction from Thor or some sort of thing. And considering they're, you know, been part of this since the beginning, that was a little disappointing. But I also wondered, because there's, like... No, and I was also... One thing we need to talk about was the fact that they did actually destroy Asgard, which I didn't think they would go through. I thought I did really like that twist on it. In the way that, like, yeah, they actually did kind of cause Ragnarok to happen, and also was one of the best jokes with Hulk when he ends up. That was well done too. But yeah, that's pretty much all I had.
Yeah, Hogan, Volstagg, and Fandral, the Warriors 3. I agree. They didn't do them very much justice.
What about Lady Sif? When did she die?
She just wasn't in this.
She just wasn't even mentioned.
She just survived somehow by not being in this film, because otherwise she would have been killed too. Also, I guess we didn't mention the actual fire demon that was in this, that was basically trying to, you know, part of Ragnarok, as far as, you know, who Hela eventually is going to have to... Yeah, Searcher, with the voice of Clancy Brown, so that was kind of interesting. Also, Taika Waititi brought in a few people, so we also had Rachel House from The Hunt for the Wilder People, who played the main female social worker, was obviously Jeff Goldblum's right-hand woman, and then he also brought Sam Neill from that film in to play the actor that was portraying Odin, along with Matt Damon and Luke Hemsworth. So a lot of connections and cameos and stuff like that appearing as well. This one really has nothing to do with spoilers, but I forgot to bring it up before. But I did enjoy the music in this one. I usually don't pay much attention to it, but I absolutely loved the Willy Wonka sequence with Pure Imagination, like a variation of that song playing. Like, I thought that was perfect. I don't know what the motive behind that as far as bringing that in, but I was interested, Dan, as far as some of the influences that you might have saw in the movie as we kind of wrap up our thoughts on Thor Ragnarok. Obviously, you do get the little Willy Wonka sequence, and there are some Flash Gordon kind of similarities and references, as well as probably a little bit of Star Wars in there. Like, do you feel like they did a good job of kind of blending some of those previous or influences that YTD brought in here, or what was your take on some of that?
Well, I think like one of the biggest influences for all this is actually Jack Kirby, and like you see a lot of these designs, a lot of these creations. I know a lot of people are like, oh, like Flash Gordon and things like that. Yes, but Kirby came up with them before that, or worse in reference, because Flash Gordon's been around forever too. But especially the look of Helena, like the design of a lot of these worlds, a lot of these characters are very much that of Jack Kirby. So that was great to see. Like I mentioned, those sequences that looked very much like, you know, moving paintings, that was very much in reference to Jack Kirby as well. So I thought like they did him justice. It's like his, like, you know, been a big celebration because it's his 100th year birth. Like, he would be 100 this year. And I thought, like, you see his influence all over this, but it is very much 80s. And like you mentioned, like, the Sith score was really effective too. So,
yeah, I agree. All right, we'll go around everybody's final thoughts and grades on Thor Ragnarok. Amanda, anything else you want to say? Now is your chance, or forever hold your peace. And what kind of grade would you give Thor Ragnarok?
I don't think I have anything else to say.
All right, what's your grade?
So I'm going to give a
8.5 for you. I think the only other thing that I would say is, I guess in comparison, because I keep going back to Guardians a little bit, I do like what Guardians did from a visual standpoint, maybe better than what Thor Ragnarok was able to pull off. I think the colors were so stunning in Guardians. Just, again, I rewatched it just last night to kind of think of them both in comparison with each other, and I think the colors are just way more popping, I guess, in Guardians of the Galaxy. But I think this one, I really enjoy Waititi's humor. And I really enjoyed a lot of what they did there, and I kind of like this world, off-world premise as far as getting away from Earth with some of these Marvel characters. So I am a fan of this film. I don't know how I would rank it, you know, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm not doing any of that type of stuff at this point, but I would probably give it like a 7.5 or an 8, like somewhere right in that range. Matt, any other comments that you didn't get to talk about yet, and what grade would you give it?
I don't think I got anything to say. Like, I loved it. I loved all the characters. I loved the things they did with it. It was great. It's a solid 8 out of 10 for me.
Dan, what about you?
Yeah, I pretty much said my piece. I would probably give it, like, 7.5. I know that's kind of splitting hairs, like 7. Just, I had a lot of fun with it. I was really strong. I thought, like, it's hard not to compare it to other Marvel films where I felt like something like maybe Spider-Man Homecoming is more of a complete film because it had a little bit more dimension to it, but I thought it was just one of those movies that was pure entertainment at its best form. So, yeah.
All right. Last question for all of you guys, and we'll wrap this thing 100% up here. Is it the best Thor film so far? And what, with only one film left to go, what is currently the best comic book superhero film of the year?
You can't be coming in here asking us that unprepared.
Do you like it better than Thor 1 and 2?
Maybe.
But you're not prepared to talk about the comic book films of 2017 up to this point?
No. Right. I need to look at all of them on paper. And I don't even know. Spider-Man, Guardians.
Wonder Woman, Logan.
Wonder Woman and Logan. I feel like Logan was so far, so long ago. I don't feel like that was this year.
I know when we talked about it last time, when we did our last review, I think it was on Spider-Man, everybody still was putting Logan at the top. Matt, is that still how you feel? And is this, you already said that this is the best Thor film. So just kind of, how are the comic book films stacked up for you this year?
All right, so I think I like this more than Logan, but, like, that's just me. Like, it's kind of, like, I don't know, more Star Wars-y, and Star Wars is my thing. Like,
makes sense.
Like, yeah, like, it's got, like, space and silly and fantasy. Like, Logan is probably the better movie, like, if we're just, like, going by, like, what's a better movie. But I think Thor's more me, and I think I enjoy it more.
All right, fair enough. Dan, is this the best Thor film we've had so far?
Man, geez. I would say certainly the most entertaining. I would want to maybe see Dark World again just to see, but I would probably lean towards yes. And for me, I think Logan still reigns supreme as the best comic book movie. I like this. I think I probably liked it more than Guardians, and I liked it more than Wonder Woman, oddly enough. But I think I like Spider-Man Homecoming some reason more. I don't know. But it's been, I don't know, they're all really four really good movies. So it's a good year for comic book films, in my opinion.
Yeah, good year for comic book films so far, but hey, there's one more to go. So
next weekend,
we'll see how that turns out. So maybe we'll have a review coming soon about Justice League. We'll have to wait and see. But that's it for this episode. We will be back with more Kevin Smith talk, with more video game film talk, whether you want it or not. Remember, we're watching them, so you don't have to. But we'll be back with all of that stuff. Also, pay attention to what else is going on with the Geekcast Radio Network. We've been in the process of revealing our top 100 fictional villains. So if you haven't been keeping up with that, we have hours and hours of listening material for you if you want to start going back and hearing our takes on the top 100 fictional villains. And by this point, you'll be able to listen to all of it straight through to the end and find out what number one was. But until then, stay tuned for another episode next week from the Cinema Geeks. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter as well. At Cinema Geekcast is the show handle. My individual Twitter is at Optimus Solo. Amanda, yours is?
At Hard Candy Mandy, eyes, no eyes.
Matt?
I'm at Fridley Sent.
Dan?
I'm at Movie Revolt.
So that does it for us. Tune in next week for another chance to listen to the Cinema Geeks.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.